Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Criss, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Criss host.
Well, thank you, Eric, and welcome to our audience. This is the Excellent Fiduciary Podcast. It's a show that increases the competence of investment committee and benefit plan committee members by meeting head-on the specific challenges they face. I'm Ronald Hagan, and today we're talking about the federal government's increased scrutiny of group health plans. Well, now it's time to welcome Christine Denton to the Excellent Fiduciary. She is Executive Vice President of the Risk Practice Group at Roland Criss. She and her team conduct assessments of the methods employers use to comply with their fiduciary duty defined in the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or ERISA. A crucial part of that work is determining if the fees paid by a retirement plan's participants for services like record keeping and investments are reasonable. She's here to provide expertise on how human resources and finance executives should respond to the U.S. Department of Labor's ramped up security of health plan fees and how it affects employers. Hi, Christine, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, here we go with a twist on a retirement plan law that was passed in 2012 that now affects health and welfare plans. Before we dive into that regarding health and welfare situation, please give our audience a little history on the regulation that was passed in 2012 that I just referred to and how it relates to our podcast today.
Sure. I would love to. Before looking at that regulation, I want to spend just a few minutes setting the stage for our discussion by providing some background on the topic. Employers that sponsor 401k and 403b and other types of retirement plans rely on third parties to conduct the day-to-day administrative functions of these plans. Those are the service providers that we refer to. And those types of service providers can range from investment managers, record keepers, consultants, and really virtually any other third party that provides any necessary plan services. And they get paid for those efforts. So it's the responsibility of plan fiduciaries, and those are those individuals that are ultimately responsible for administering the plan and the investment of plan assets, to pay those third parties no more than what we refer to as reasonable compensation.
I guess that's the reason then that some experts refer to that regulation that was passed in 2012 as the reasonable fee rule.
That's right. Yeah. So, and before we move on, I just want to give a small word of caution. There are consequences for non-compliance with the rule. If a fiduciary pays a third party an unreasonable amount, then that fiduciary could have liability and face excise tax penalties under ERISA. The tax penalties alone can be significant, but then on top of that, we can have class action lawsuits by disgruntled employees, which cause economic loss as well as reputational damage to those plan fiduciaries. So there's a significant amount of risk in not complying to the rule to those plan fiduciaries. And now we're looking at consequences of non-compliance for an employer in both health and welfare plans as well as retirement plans.
Okay, well, that's, a good segue into the heart of our discussion today. And if you will now describe for our audience how the reasonable fee rule applies to health and welfare plans.
Sure. At its inception in 2012, the fee rule that is found in ERISA Section 408B2, we refer to that rule as the 408B2 rule, it targeted defined contribution retirement plans. Buried in a recently passed 2020 year-end Consolidated Appropriations Act, and I'm going to refer to that as CAA going forward just to make things a little simpler, there's a provision that requires group health plan brokers and consultants to make comprehensive fee disclosures similar to those that have applied to retirement plans since 2012. So the new fee disclosure requirements will result in additional compliance obligations for group health plan sponsors starting this year, 2021. To put it simply, the CAA requires that compensation paid to health plan providers must be reasonable. So now this reasonable fee rule applies to both ERISA retirement plans and health plans.
Okay, just a quick pause here. Are you saying then that employers face the possibility of a breach of fiduciary duty claim if the compensation paid to health and welfare plan providers is deemed unreasonable?
Yes, that's right. Even if an employer's ERISA retirement plan complies with the fee rule. So we're talking really about two separate issues here.
Well, where does a human resources department or a benefit plan committee start its preparation for a possible DOL audit of its health plan?
Well, that's a great question. There's actually good news for employers. The fee rule provides an exemption from liability that protects the responsible plan fiduciaries from an ERISA violation. But the catch is that there are three steps that have to be executed and documented. So the first one requires the fiduciary to reasonably believe that all the information required under the regulation has been disclosed to them. And that would be any service contracts, any year-end fee reconciliation. The best practice would be an actual annual fee disclosure from a service provider. We understand that not all providers are in the practice of giving those on an annual basis, but the fiduciary must believe that they have all the information they need to make the decision. And then if there is any kind of a failure to disclose, or if that disclosure is inadequate, then the fiduciary has to ask the service provider to produce the required information. And this kind of puts the ball back in the provider's court to provide that information. If they don't within a reasonable period of time, it is on the employer then to notify the DOL. And this kind of puts an exclamation mark on how important this issue is to the Department of Labor, because they have an actual portal on their website that is intended for this type of whistleblowing activity, if you may, that's required on the part of employers who believe that they have not received adequate disclosure.
I suppose it's safe to assume that any communication that a plan sponsor or an employer might have with a vendor who has not provided adequate documentation or disclosure should be done in a written form, an email, a letter, mm-hmm. or something, in order to demonstrate that that request has actually been made.
Yeah, that's a great point, because documentation, as we'll see as we look a little bit further at this rule, is really the key to compliance, the key to demonstrating compliance. And then the third thing that is important in demonstrating compliance take advantage of that exemption is that a detailed assessment must be made that scores the vendor's compensation against several qualitative factors that must be part of the employer's fiduciary file. So it's not enough to just have the disclosures in file. There has to be an action on part of the employer that shows that a process was employed to get to this determination of reasonableness. And it really goes beyond what we consider, you know, what we've traditionally think of when we're looking at fees, you know, that benchmarking exercise of the apples to apples comparison of this provider's fee against this provider's fee. It really gets more to the level of service provided for that fee. Sometimes the lowest cost provider is not the reasonable service arrangement for your particular plan. We want to look beyond that to make sure that the services that are being rendered are achieving some kind of value for the end user of that service.
Well, I think an obvious question to ask, and it occurs to me at this point, is what is the legal definition of a reasonable fee?
Well, I wish I had a really nice, concise answer for you on that topic. I think the answer might be a little disappointing in one respect, especially for executives and human resources managers who bear an ERISA plan's fiduciary burden. ERISA doesn't define what constitutes reasonable compensation for services, unfortunately. It gets back to what we talked about just a little bit ago, is that we're looking to demonstrate value. And so whatever the exercise needs to look at for that employer to determine value is what is necessary. And on top of that, making sure that that determination of value is documented so that that paper trail demonstrates a careful analysis. And the intent of that is that it will lead to a conclusion that will stand up under a DOL audit.
Well, we'd like to leave our audience today with some takeaways on how to ready themselves for this change in the health and welfare plan management. Maybe a good way to continue that discussion would be that every year since 2012, Roland Criss has conducted dozens of fee assessments for employers that sponsor retirement plans. We do that every year, dozens of them. And as a result, your team has extensive experience working directly with fiduciaries and the fee disclosure rule. I think our audience would benefit from hearing you describe how human resources departments and benefit plan committees are organizing to absorb the Consolidated Appropriation Act's emerging impact.
Yeah, so we would advise, just like we advise in 408B2 compliance, that to comply with the CAA, responsible plan fiduciaries develop procedures that will permit it to demonstrate that the arrangements with third-party service providers are reasonable. Documenting that process is the most effective way, really, to achieve compliance.
As we observe how clients are organizing themselves for compliance with the CAA, best practices are emerging. And I wonder if you could give us an outline of best practices that our listeners may use and consider taking away from today's podcast.
I can immediately think of four actions that I think would be would give any plan sponsor or sponsor of a health and welfare plan a good start. I think this is a great outline that anyone can put into practice. First, you would want to assign an individual or a committee the responsibility for managing the health and welfare plan service providers and, you know, tasking them with soliciting and collecting and evaluating all of those required disclosures. It's good, I think, to note that the disclosures must be received reasonably in advance of when the service provider contract or arrangement is entered into. So you should expect to receive disclosures in advance of executing any contracts, as well as during the term of the contract, if there are any changes to the contract fee nature, that you should expect a disclosure to accompany any changes in those contract terms. The next thing would be to implement a policy or a procedure to identify the responsible individual or committee's duties. And, you know, we would also want that plan to outline the required elements of disclosure for each individual type of service provider. It's going to, the amount of information or the data you'll receive will differ from type of service provider. And then you want that policy to track the process for responding to a service provider that fails to provide the required disclosures. Then we would want to see documentation of the review. And that documentation really, I think, is most helpfully done when it's prepared in the form of a report that can be presented to the fiduciary who's ultimately responsible for entering into service provider contracts. And then finally, you know, I think a lot of times it's helpful to hire a third party independent expert to conduct the fee assessment. A lot of times the full breadth of the market is not really available to most employers. And so hiring a third party expert to come alongside and support that process allows for the inclusion of information that is that maybe would provide a more effective benchmark and a more effective look at the different types of service provider contracts in the industry. So, you know, ultimately, I would say that procedural due diligence is really the key to complying with any fee disclosure rule, whether it's 408B2 or the CAA. And I really can't overemphasize enough the importance of following a defined process in complying with the new health and welfare rules reasonable fee requirement.
Well, Christine, thank you very much for sharing your insights with our audience today. Your experience is extremely valuable and has the ability to save employers a significant amount of time lost due to trial and error. The role of the ERISA plan fiduciary continues to grow in complexity, it seems. And as we get ready to close our podcast today, I think it's important to point out that every time ERISA changes, the executives that manage their company's employee benefit plans want to hear how the changes practically affect them. And it's our hope that we have given our audience today some practical steps on how to react to the requirements of this new CAA fee reasonableness rule. Well, to our audience, we thank you for joining us. And if any of you would like help making the changes to your health and welfare plan management system or your fiduciary governance system that's required by the fee rule, Roland Chris has the skills to help you do that. We hope you'll make plans to join us for our next podcast. Connect with Roland Chris on LinkedIn to get the topic for that event. Visit our website at rolandchris.com. I hope you have a fantastic day.